I wish I had four preschool children. Mine are now 17, 19, 21, and 23. So, they're down the road. Being a parent is a lot like walking a tightrope. It's a lot easier to fall off than it is to stay on. But unlike walking a tightrope, you don't get a second chance. Let me give you a little perspective with respect to the training of children. It's well to remember that for all practical purposes, there are two major divisions involved in the process of training a child. There is, first of all, the period called childhood. From birth through age 11. And for all practical purposes, you have 12 years in which to do the job. Period. What you do in the first 12 years of a child's life will almost completely determine what happens from there on out. Now, there's another very strategic period, moving from 12 on to 20, 21, or later, depending upon when the child is married or moves into adult responsibility. This is the period of adolescence, the stormy period. But this is what I want you to see. There is a cause-effect relationship between these two divisions. And what you do here largely determines what you do here. You cannot shred relationships for 12 years and expect to build them during the adolescent period. I want to share with you the three primary means of communication during these first 11 years, and I would say particularly during the first six, or the preschool period. The first way you communicate is through your attitude. How you feel about things will largely be that which you communicate to your child. This is one of the most distressing things in counseling. And that is, I find a couple who are really suffering from protracted adolescence, but they've been plunged into parenthood. And for the first six or more years of their marriage and parental responsibility, they are still in the process of working out their own hang-ups, which they tend to foist upon their children. You take, for example, a woman who is extremely hostile. She's hostile toward her husband. She's hostile toward life. She's even mad at herself. This is a person who communicates so strongly that she infects her children with this negative view toward life, toward people. The second way you communicate during this period of time is your example. And by the way, you communicate most through example when you are least aware of it. Your children are very, very sensitive to how you feel, and you cannot cover it. You can fool adults right across the board, but you cannot fool children. They see right through you. It's just like a pane of glass. In And this is why sometimes when you are not very happy with your husband, your very small 3-year-old looks at you and says, "Mommy, why don't you like Daddy?" And,
you know, you back off. You know, who? Me?
And she's picking up. Not only your feeling tone, she's picking up your example. How you relate, for example, to your husband largely determines how your child is going to relate to his or her partner. Greatest sex education you give is not the information you provide. It's the example you set. If I'm a beast to my wife, I'm in the process of developing first-class perverts in my home. If I'm a thoughtful, tender, understanding husband, then that is the form of sex education I give to my children. The third and crucial area is the area of relationships. Now, if you've ever worked with teenagers, you know that the most important thing during this period of time is the relationship he sustains to his father and to his mother. But these are built back here. And this is why, as you will see in a moment, I encourage you to spend a lot of time building the relationships with your children during these first 12 years. You have 12 years in which to build relationships, set an example, and communicate your attitude. This is why, as you will see in a moment, I encourage you to spend a lot of time building the relationships with your children during these. Now, a person's confidence as a parent is in direct proportion to the age of his children. See, for the first 11 years, you can do no wrong. And then all of a sudden, overnight, you lose your competency. You see, your children spoil you. Your mom with the almighty answer. Got something wrong? Go to mom. She can fix it. She's got the finest psychosomatic medicine in the world. Far better for the cut finger than any medicine. It's mom who says, "Oh, honey." Tears dry up. Everything's well with the world. And they spoil the living daylights out of you. Because all of a sudden, mom, who could do nothing wrong, now can do nothing right. Mom, what was it like to live on the ark? See, every child goes through a period of time when nobody knows less than my parents. They are wonderful people, but... And that's a wonderfully contributory period. In fact, the people who have not gone through that period are some of the people with the most serious problems in adult life. That's a process of shedding yourself of dependency and of becoming an independent person. So when your child actually sasses you during the adolescent period, this may be the most encouraging thing that you are being fed. He or she is in the process of growing up. "Don't tell me, Mom. I can do it." Now, let me share with you some principles in the brief time that we have about working with preschool children. Number one, feed your child responsibility. Well, you say he's only two.
exceed your child responsibility. Maybe his task is to pick up the morning newspaper. It's a major project. We forget it 3 out of 4 days. But it's the big deal. And he goes out and he picks up the newspaper and brings it in and puts it down on the coffee table and he looks at you and you look at him and say, "Wonderful, Mom, so proud of you. You're a big boy." And you can almost see the stature increase. Growth comes by responsibility. And we're facing some very serious problems in evangelicalism because of this, particularly in our Christian schools. And if you've ever been exposed to them, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Because the average kid in a Christian school came out of an evangelical home in which he can only perform on the basis of conformity. But it's always conformity to somebody else's system. He only has an external guidance system, but it's never been made his own. His conscience is the conscience of mom and dad, the group, the church, but it's never become his own. And this is why this kid goes to a Christian school and comes unglued. Just blows his core, becomes the rebel of rebels. I will take you to Christian schools where there are people who are far more hostile and rebellious than you'll ever find in Berkeley. And it may not always take the same form, but deep down underneath, tremendous resentment. And I'll show you a lot of kids who come emotionally unglued. Because now that they're out in the real world, they cannot hack it. And every time, I repeat, you make any decision for your child which your child is capable of making for himself, you are making him an emotional cripple. And the hardest thing is to see that when you are doing it, when you are en route. You can see the product every time. And the interesting thing is that some of you came out of homes like that. And you resent it. But you'll turn out around and reproduce exactly the same thing. Well, we could talk for an hour on this, but let me give you another one to try on for size. It's more exciting as we go on. Hang on. Provide a joyful atmosphere. Is it fun to live in your home? Or is it really quite a chore? I can almost immediately tell when I step into a home whether this is a home that is conducive to the rearing of children. And I can tell it to you primarily by the atmosphere. Whether it's a relaxed, enjoyable, fun place, or whether we all sit around like Dresden dolls on a crate of eggs, scared to death to move. And this is why I am coming as a marriage and family counselor to abominate the Better Homes and Garden Home. It's aseptic, but it's lethal. So clean. Everything is always in place. So lovely. It's lousy. Excuse the directiveness. To go into a home where, good night, I talk to the kids and I ask this kid, "What do you remember most?" This is one of my common questions I ask the kids at the seminary. And in Christian school, "What do you remember most about your family life?" And it's very interesting. You can almost put them in two classifications. "Oh, what do I remember most? I'd prefer to forget."
And there's the other kid that just lights up. Oh, man. I have the most fantastic memories, Prof. Let me tell you about them. They tell me about a vacation in Colorado where they got in a Jeep and took out over the countryside and Pop going along and horsing around and Mom in the back seat yelling, "Watch out!"
You know, some of the best memories my kids have, I've often asked them, what do you remember most? I was talking to my oldest son sometime. He said, "Hey, Bob, Dad, you know what I remember most? And that is when you and I used to wrestle in the living room and Mom hitting the fan." My wife is a strange woman. She thinks you should not wrestle in the living room. Remarkable. So she used to toss us out. And we used to roar about her lack of perspective. Somebody was asking me some time ago, what do you think is the secret of speaking? I'll tell you, it's enjoying it. If you enjoy it, so do they. If you endure it, so do they. And the same thing is true of being a parent. If you enjoy it, man, so do they. But you know, some of us are so serious, oh boy, how you'll be a Christian parent, that we're really not enjoying it at all. We're usually enduring it. Third, spend time with your children doing the things that they enjoy. You know, when you get at this stage of your life, you have certain regrets. And you also have some things for which you have no regrets. And I'll tell you the one thing for which my wife and I have no regrets, and that's any hour we ever spent with our children. I never regret one hour spent with any of my children. You know what I regret? That we didn't spend more. And that's why if, you know, your child comes in from playing or when he moves beyond the preschool period and starts into school, one of the most important times for you to be at home, Mom, is when that kid comes home. Walk in that front door and there's that warm, lovable, understanding, interested Mom. And all of the hurts and all of the blasts that he's gotten on the outside suddenly become wonderfully softened by a woman. The average time the American father spends alone with his boy every week in America is 7.5 minutes. Now, let me ask you, if that same man made an investment of 7.5 minutes in his business, gets what would be the product? I was talking to a group of businessmen. I said, "Gentlemen, if you only spent 7.5 minutes with your business, what would happen?" A guy just blurted out, "It'd fold tomorrow." Now, please note something. It is not the amount of time you spend with your child. It's the quality of the relationship. And there are times when I would say to some of you, don't spend time with your kid. You're too negatively infectious. When you're hostile, you better go hide. Don't spend time with him. Would you infect him with that?
Oh, he said, "I'm supposed to play with you, so come on, let's go." Come on, let's not horse around. I don't have a lot of time for this. You know where you might as well be? Anywhere in the world except with him.
You'd be much better to look your little guy right in the eye and say, "Hey, buddy, I get 10 minutes, and I wouldn't like to do anything more than to spend them with you. What do you want to do?" He looks at you and says, "Hey, Mom,
play ball with me. Well, I can't play ball as well as you can, but I'll sure try. And you go out, he throws the ball, and you swing, you can't hit it for sour apples. And he thinks, man, Mom's great.
Because she's interested in him. Your child has more understanding per square inch than you do. So he understands you're busy. What he really wants to know is, what do you do when you do have the time? What do you choose to do? That's what tips your hand. Relationships are far more important than reputation. And I could care less what you think about my home. From the standpoint of its design and its interior decorating and all of the rest of it. Because I'm not building a home to impress you. I'm building a home to rear four kids. And kids are not impressed by junk. Only adults are. Fourth. Fasten your safety belt. Love your child's father. And I mean by this, respect his role. You ever say snidely, okay, come on, kids, let's get in line. The head of the house said this is what we're supposed to do. See, he's picking up exactly what you're saying. You know, outwardly we conform, we go through it. But inwardly, you know what we have in our homes today? We don't have a father and a mother. We have a mother and an assistant mother. And the average American home desperately needs a male image. A guy who's strong, and I'm not talking about physical fitness. I'm talking about a person to whom we look and who's respected. And I hope every time you get an opportunity, you're on your husband's team. And you're the president of his fan club. Man, think of it! That's her dad! Wow! Little kid sits and looks. Man. Respect his role, respect his ministry. Where's Dad, Mom? Oh, he's over at the campus again. You know, it's very interesting. I covet for you some of the wonderful things I'm experiencing these days. I just wrote to my son, who's having a fantastic ministry this summer in Chicago with delinquent kids. You may have read in the news of the two policemen who were shot. This took place in an apartment where my son is teaching a Bible class. And with a police escort, he was invited to go in to conduct the class. And he had so many people come to the class after this that they couldn't get them all into the apartment. Last time I was at Wheaton speaking there, my son came out from Wheaton, and I was staying there in their dormitory accommodation. So we got together after the evening service, and we were having a wonderful time, and we were praying together. And we got into a little bull session, as we're prone to do. And I said, what do you remember most about Mom? And Bev said to me, well, Dad, I think the thing I remember most about Mom is that, number one, she was your greatest supporter.
And number two, that I can never remember once her feeling sorry for herself because you were gone. And Bob looked across and he said, you know, Biff, that's exactly my conclusion. I kept asking myself, why in the world is it at my school I'm constantly running into kids who just despise their parent for one reason or another and are so resentful because they're in the ministry? And I tried to figure, I don't have this attitude. In fact, this is a great privilege. Where did I get it? They didn't get it from me. They got it primarily from my wife. See, my wife had to take me out to the airport with four kids in the back seat. And, you know, after you drop Pop off, you know, and there he goes again. Woo! You know, then you got to go home. And, boy, on the way home, you see, you're communicating like crazy. Either negatively or positively. And over again, they would say, boy, Mom would say, isn't it wonderful to have a father that God has given us the privilege of sharing with other people? My friend, you don't come up resenting in the midst of that thing. But you see, a woman who's constantly feeling sorry for herself and is constantly filled with resentment, that is what you communicate. And then don't be surprised if your kids grow up and may not know what they want to do, but they know one thing they don't want to do, and that's be with Crusade or in any form of Christian ministry. By the way, don't be ashamed to express your love. I mean outwardly, in front of your children. Now, don't evaluate this on the basis of your kid, especially when they're teenagers, because that embarrasses them no end. Oh, no, here we go again. Fifth. Allow your child sufficient developmental rope. One of the things that I am most concerned that our Christian homes develop is creativity. Christians can be the most boring individuals in the world. And most boring people come out of boring homes. And in order for a child to develop creativity, he must have a sphere of freedom. You cannot be nailing him to the floor every time he turns around. In fact, you might even lose one of the vases or vases. And a piece of the Wedgwood. Imagine. And they might even dent some of your lovely furniture. See, my wife and I were married. We got a fabulous set of china. You should have seen it. It was absolutely tremendous. Beautiful set. I don't know how many $100 this dear friend of ours spent to give it to us. So pretty soon we got four children. Well, I have to have we have to make a decision. Are we going to keep the china intact and have children who grow up who can't wash and dry dishes? Or are we going to have children who wash and dry dishes, and in the process, you know, you may lose a cup or two? Well, if you want to know what route we took, you come to our home and look into our china closet. And when you see that remaining dish, then you'll know. You see, there are casualties in the process of rearing children. But there is a greater casualty than the casualties, and that's not allowing a casualty. We get all shook up. Woo-hoo, my, he failed. Friend, that's great. That may be the greatest learning experience he ever had. There will be casualties on his part. There will be casualties on your part.
That's what will keep you dependent. I had a dear woman come into my class last year. Mother of 6 kids. She was on a panel in my home course. And a student started firing away with questions. And I'll never forget this dear woman saying, I can still remember talking to my oldest child, a girl, and I got her into my room one day and I said to her, honey, I want you to know I've never been down this road before. You're my first child. And I'm quite sure I've made and probably am making many mistakes. But I just wanted you to know that I have your best interest at heart. And if I make a mistake, I'll tell you how. I really can't explain it. I just know that it exists because women are very sensitive about the very practical things their husbands do to communicate their love to them. But they don't always transfer that knowledge. For example, I work with delinquent parents a great deal, and they often say, I take it you love your children. Oh, yes, certainly. Well, let me ask you, how have you communicated that love? The lady said, how have I communicated that love? He's 16 years of age, and for 16 years I've washed all of his clothes, prepared all of his meals, and sewed all of his clothes. And I look her straight in the eye and I say, and that's how you feel you have impressed him with your love. Your kid could care less. It's not till you become an adult that you've ever got enough insight to appreciate that this is what mom did. What he appreciates is that just as he's tearing across the floor, you sweep him up like this and pick him up and say, man, Mom, so proud of you. Boy, what a privilege to have you for a boy. And he smiles, you put him down, he never like misses a step. And he keeps right on going.
It's the fact that he went out in the backyard and he put together the little beat-up house and shot all of Dad's nails. And you even know he may hit the fan when he comes home. And he even nailed it to the garage. He comes plowing in the door and asks you to come back, to come out to see the new house he built. And you go out and, man, you're so proud of the house. And you talk to him about it and you ask him to explain this. And that's how you come through in terms of your love. I wish my wife were here for more reasons than one. But I wish she were here because, in my judgment, she knows far more about how to tell you to do this than I ever thought of knowing. In fact, everything I know, I learned from her. She is a master at the art of communication to children, to teenagers. She loves teenagers. They are hanging out the doors of our house like Grand Central Station. People say, how in the world? You know, you're in the over 30 group, long over 30. How in the world? I'll tell you one thing. The average teenager hangs on to any adult who takes an interest in the things that interest him. And I can still remember her on a Friday night yelling her head off out at the junior high or high school game, come on, make a touchdown! And everybody, ooh, there's the seminary professor's wife. She's such a quiet person, I never knew she could make so much noise. Guy's down there playing on the field and the rest of the boy knows mom's up in the stands on the team. See, that's the way you communicate to a child. In the most practical, realistic, you've got to come through at a level at which he can understand.
And when you play with him, when you listen to him, when you take an interest in the things that interest him, that is when you communicate your love. Seventh, pray for them and yourself.
You know, it's very interesting because I'm working with a lot of people who've got kids over here. And the great tragedy, and this is one reason why I'm so excited about the assignment here, is that most of you are over here in terms of your children. There are a few of you, but not too many that are over here. And the problem is that most people never know what the name of the game is till they get over here. And it's too late. See, I have people just like you, same idealism, all of the rest of it, who have delinquent children. And right now, if I said to them, look, if you will cut off your right arm with this knife, I'll guarantee I'll get you that girl back or that boy back. You know what the first thing they would say? Give me the knife. I was in a home about 3 months ago. It's about a $300,000 home. I got lost on the living room rug. And I had two parents sit there because the state is committing their child to a correctional institution. And for all practical purposes, declaring them as incompetent parents. And I happen to know what this man is worth and the rest of it, and I assure you, if I told him, my friend, you give me $1 million right there, I'll guarantee you I'll get you your boy back. He'd say, that's too small a price. He looked me straight in the eye. He said, I'll give all of my reputation. I will give all of my money. I will give all of my success if I can get my boy back. But you know what this guy was? He's going to be a big-time operator. And he is. Very successful professionally. Prominent member of our community. Parentally, he's a failure. Did it ever occur to you that you could be successful as a campus crusader and a failure as a parent? That's a live option. I want to give you two suggestions to put under this. First of all, the first thing I would suggest is that you're going to have to learn to relax in the Lord. Most of us get too uptight as parents. I'm now going to be a parent. I really appreciate very much the suggestions you are giving me. Very helpful. Because I don't want to drop the watermelon. And I see somebody like I say, you know, lady, the possibilities of you doing it are absolutely fantastic. And you know, that leads me to the second thing I want to say. That's why God will bring failure into your life. You know why he gives you children? You thought it was only in order that you might train the children. Uh-uh. God gave you children in order to train you. Not because of what you're going to do for them, but what he's going to do for you. And friend, you're going to have failure. You're not going to hit the bottom. You're going to go clean through. See, it's wonderful for me to tell you about a boy in Chicago this summer that's blowing my mind in terms of the exciting ministry. I sit down and read his letters, and I'm telling you, friend, it's like stretching my spiritual capacity to its breaking point. That's lovely. I assure you, it's not really the product of what we did. Let me also tell you that we went through a period of time when we blew the paper out and lost $68 in 1 month and shoved the papers down the sewer so that we didn't have to bring them home and flunked the chemistry course, though he was in the honors class, and comes home with the F, but we can't have that, so we change it on the report card. And the same night, the professor calls me up and says, Dr. Hendricks, I want you to know how badly I felt about flunking your son. About what? And if seeing a guy who's larger than I am walk through the front door and get the whole picture to descend upon it and collapse in my arms and in the arms of my wife and say, why do you love me the way you do when I'm such a disgrace to you? And then see God move into his life. This marked the beginning of real spiritual growth on a personal basis. Do you want that? Uh-uh. You want the kid with a nice ministry in Chicago. And I could regale you with some pretty impressive stories. And they're not through yet. And I'm quite sure that there are some of them that are really going to make a bust somewhere in Ruth. My girl just about lost her life last night in an automobile accident. Just barely escaped. Has all of her teeth out, completely severed in the bottom part, and a huge gash across the top of her head. Driving down a road, I drove down the same thing. I got the oil on my car, so I know it was oily. See, this is life, girls. See, don't bring any of this fakey stuff into Christian experience. This is life. This is the way it's lived. And I'm here to tell you that you're not only going to hit the bottom, you're going to go through, and you're going to do exactly what my dear wife and I did on many occasions. You fall down on your knees and you cry, oh God, unless you do something, we've had it. And he loves to work. You know why? Because then you will never be able to say, man, were we competent parents. All you'll be able to say is, to God be the glory. Great things he hath done. Father, we thank you for what you are teaching us, each one enrolled in your school. And the courses in the curriculum are sometimes very difficult, and the tuition is high. But we thank you that you design every single course for our maximal growth. And I thank you especially, Father, for these girls, for their own motivation, for their love for you, for their desire to be competent instruments in your hands for the accomplishment of your purpose. And I pray that somehow you'll do what we cannot do with words, that you will communicate to the heart, and that the priority of their home will become so clear that they will become the tools that you use to accomplish your purpose in the life of their children and in their own life as well. For Christ's sake, we ask it. Amen.